But of course, the big question for us on this side of the Irish Sea, what does this vote mean for Stormont here? What does it mean for government in Northern Ireland? And we're going to get the thoughts now of Chris Hazard from Sinn Féin. We're also joined by Edwin Pooch from the DUP. Good morning to you, gentlemen. Edwin Pooch, first of all, to you. I'm sure you're pretty delighted this morning.
Oh, absolutely. The union is safe for generations to come again. And I think what's remarkable to take from all of this is that Alex Salmond turned out to be a greater threat to the union than the IRA could ever have been. And the demonstration of that was that they done it democratically, whilst the IRA got people's backs up and ensured that many, many people would vote against going into United Ireland because of their activities. The people in Scotland actually had a reasoned, free vote and debate and discussion, and arrived at a decision and at a conclusion.
But you can't escape the fact that 1.6 million people in Scotland voted to leave the UK. That's a staggering number, isn't it?
It is. I think for nationalists, I believe it's a high watermark. Now, we're coming on the back of the period where we've had the Scottish nationalists in government. You've had a Conservative government in the UK, which is pretty much reviled in Scotland. You've just had the Commonwealth Games. You've had a period of austerity. There's a whole lot of reasons why this was a particularly good time to call an election from a nationalist perspective. And I don't believe that those circumstances will prevail in the near future once again.
Chris Hazard, what does it mean for us here in Northern Ireland, do you think?
Well, good morning. I think the first thing to say is, you know, we must congratulate the people of Scotland. What we've seen here is a very inclusive, dynamic, democratic process. I think the development of having 16 and 17-year-olds vote is very, very important for the democratic process. So I think the first thing to do is we must congratulate the people of Scotland. As you've outlined, you know, a sizable number of people have not only voted for independence, but even a large proportion of those people who voted to stay with the union, they want change now. And I think that's the big thing of this. The referendum demonstrates that the nature of the union has changed forever. You know, we've seen through this century that the empire is now gone. The union has now changed forever with the Good Friday Agreement and devolution, obviously, for ourselves. So I think we now need to see a debate here.
Okay.
Benefit to people of Ireland.
And does it, for instance, put the border poll back now on the agenda?
Well, the border poll was on the agenda, you know, no matter what happened in Scotland, but this is very, very important. We're now going to see, you know, the big constitutional questions asked throughout Ireland and England and Britain and everywhere else. You know, I think the people of Scotland have lit a fire underneath the very framework of the union. You know, I think this is a productive fire. I don't think it's destructive. I think people are saying we need more power for ourselves. We want to be in control of our own economic destinies. We want to see a more fair and equitable democratic process.
But we can't even agree on the powers that we have.
Well, no, I wouldn't agree with that. You know, we've seen the transfer.
Well, we're not fit for purpose, according to Peter Robinson.
Well, Peter Robinson may say that the institutions aren't fit for purpose. I think most people actually agree that maybe some people trying to work the institutions should try a little bit harder. We've seen the transfer of policing and justice powers. You know, when you look at the success of devolution as a whole in the North, you can't come to the same conclusion that Peter Robinson has.
Mm-hmm. Edwin Pooch, from your point of view, the prospect maybe of a border poll, we see what the referendum has done for Scotland. There was a mature debate over there about the best way forward, and it turns out now as if they're going to get a good deal out of it because they're going to get more powers. Could something similar happen here?
Well, I'd be pretty relaxed about the outcome of a border poll.
Would you support one? Would you go for it?
Well, you see, under the Belfast Agreement then, we would have border polls every 7 years thereafter.
And what's wrong with that?
With the Ulster Unionists signed up to, well, that causes instability. And I don't believe that that's good. So if we weren't stuck with the nonsense that had been agreed in the Belfast Agreement, a border poll at least would settle the question once again. It hasn't happened for 40-odd years.
So if that seven-year clause was removed, then you would be for it?
It was very convincing. I'd be relaxed about it because I am very confident that the outcome would be considerably greater majority would want to stay in the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland than was the case in Scotland.
And would we have the same level of mature debate here in Northern Ireland about that, or would it get bogged down in the debates around flags and emblems in the past?
I think it would inevitably get bogged down in a whole range of issues. I think there would be elements of the debate would be mature and other elements of it would get quite tense, so there's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. from a financial point of view now, Chris Hazard, there's a talk now, of course, about increased powers for Scotland. They're perhaps going to get more tax-raising powers. They're going to get more of a say on government spending there. What it might mean ultimately is that the money that they raise in Scotland are going to get spending in Scotland. And that could have implications, couldn't it, for the block grant and the money that Northern Ireland receives?
Absolutely, but you know, make no bones about this. We need to have that discussion. You know, when you consider that decisions affecting local trade, employment, investment here in the north, when they're made in Westminster, they're made for the benefit of the 97% of what constitutes the British economy in Britain, not for the 3% of what constitutes the north. And again, I seen it pointed out there yesterday that the British economy is now operating at 2% lower than its pre-recession performance, whilst the northern economy, we're working at a 14% deficit. So we need these reports. And I mentioned to the finance minister during the week of question time, at least 15 major reports since the 1957 Isles of Cuthbert report reached broadly the similar conclusions that the underperformance of the local economy here is due to the lack of economic levers in our control. We need to have destiny over, we need to have control of our own economic destiny here in the north. That means we need to get stuck in, and with a unified purpose, and getting stuck into the conversation around which economic levers we need for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. We're going to hear from David Cameron in a moment and what he had to say about the powers devolved to Northern Ireland and the changes which may well indeed come down the road. But before we do, Robin, you have a point to make. What's in your mind?
I reckon if they went for a border poll here now, the British government would do everything in its power for a yes result, just to get rid of us, because we're causing them so much headache.
And you don't see the value in a poll, because a lot of people in Scotland now are reflecting on the fact that this referendum is going to yield something for them. It may not have delivered the ultimate prize for some people, but they're going to get some movement. They're going to get extra powers by the looks of it come January.
But they've got something to bargain with. Their oil reserves, gas reserves. What have we got? Flags? Protests? I don't think it's much of a bargaining point, do you?
Robin, thank you very much. John, what's in your mind? I'm sure you, like many of the rest of us, watched the developments this morning and are now reflecting on what it all means.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they got their way. England got their way, Mr. Cameron and Mr. Osborne, but there's an awful lot of dissatisfied people in the country. And as far as that government's concerned, I think it should wake up and smell the coffee. As regards in people's standard of living, because I'm 78, and I never heard through all my life until the last lot of months of food banks for people that were too poor. Even after they get their benefits, they're too poor to go out and buy food. They'd have to have food banks to walk in and lift food or give food that was donated by people. So I'd say to Mr. Cameron and Mr. Osborne, you know what's going on in the country. You know what you have done to the country. And instead of enjoying life with your fancy friends in London, go out around the food banks and meet the people that count, the people that you put under that position. And let them talk to you.
It's interesting, John, you should say that you're 78 years old, because we heard an awful lot of stories this morning from Scotland of people who were in their 70s and indeed in their late 60s talking about voting for the very first time.
Yes. Well, I voted most of my days, like, you know, from his age 20 or 22 or so. I've always voted. But you're getting nowhere with your vote. You're just going from bad to worse. What I'm because of the policies and the austerity measures that Cameron and Osborne brought on the people, you take a man with a job and he's bringing home maybe £200 a week. He's paying a mortgage. There's maybe two children to feed. And he still has to apply for benefits. And through time, he ends up having to lose his house, maybe. And he has a job at work. And because of the austerity measures, he ends up losing his job and his home. Those are the people Osborne and Cameron should be out seeing.
Do you think?
And visiting, and talking to. Not the rich people in London. People in London can go out and buy houses at £200,000.
And what do you think the vote will mean for us over here?
Well, I hope maybe that Mr. Cameron will come over to this country and listen to the people. Because he went up to Scotland and he was a very nervous man when he was in Scotland. He was a very nervous man. And I'll tell you, I would like to have seen the vote going the other way, because he was worried about being the only Prime Minister that would break the union up. And if he keeps his policies going, these austerity measures, I'm telling you, he can get a wake-up call. And I'd like him to come over here and talk to the ordinary working-class people. Not the politicians. The working-class people. And let them put their cross that Mr. Cameron knows more what their problems are, mm-hmm. about the policies they have brought on the people with these austerity measures.
John, thank
as far as the EU is concerned, as far as I'm concerned, the sooner you get out of it, the better.
John, thank
because,
you.
Because there's an awful lot of people in Scotland and England and Wales and Northern Ireland.
Okay, John, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for that. Just finally, Edwin Pudge, to you this morning. There is a conversation going to happen today, we're being told, between Peter Robinson and the First Minister in Wales. They're going to be digesting what has been said this morning, not least by David Cameron, outside number 10. What do you think? Is there going to be some sort of a joint approach now between ourselves and Wales to see who can get most what they can from number 10?
That we seek to have common ground with other devolved regions. Indeed, I'll be meeting my Scottish and Welsh counterparts next month on health issues and how we can work together, and that's in the back of meeting in the springtime. It's very, very important that we work with our United Kingdom colleagues to get the best deal possible for the region of the United Kingdom that we serve, and that here is Northern Ireland for us. We will work closely with the Welsh, we'll work closely with the Scots, and we'll work closely at Westminster to ensure that Northern Ireland gets the best deal possible. I know that Scotland are talking about having welfare powers devolved to them. I think that Northern Ireland could give them a free transfer at this stage because Sinn Féin hasn't had the maturity to actually deal appropriately with that issue. And Chris Hazard talked about employment. He talked about growth. But he prefers that money is handed back to Westminster in fines than investing in the health service, than investing in bringing jobs to Northern Ireland and doing and carrying out training. Okay. I think we'd be much better at concentrating and focusing on ensuring that people are well trained and there is opportunities for employment than propping up a welfare system. Okay. That has clearly got issues.
Stay with us, Edwin Pudge, because we'll put some of those points to Chris Hazard you raised there, not least about welfare reform. Still with us on the programme this morning, Chris Hazard from Sinn Féin and Edwin Pudge. Before we explore this a little bit further, gentlemen, let's just take stock as to where we're at this morning, because following, of course, the announcement of that vote this morning, David Cameron appeared outside number 10 to talk about the implications of the vote in Scotland and, more importantly, what is it going to mean for the other regions of the UK. And here is some of what he had to say about how it's going to affect us here in Northern Ireland.
Just as the people of Scotland will have more power over their affairs, so it follows that the people of England, Wales and Northern Ireland must have a bigger say over theirs. The rights of these voters need to be respected, preserved and enhanced. It is absolutely right that a new and fair settlement for Scotland should be accompanied by a new and fair settlement that applies to all parts of our United Kingdom. In Wales, there are proposals to give the Welsh Government and Assembly more powers. And I want Wales to be at the heart of the debate on how to make our United Kingdom work for all our nations. In Northern Ireland, we must work to ensure that the devolved institutions function effectively. But I have long believed that a crucial part missing from this national discussion is England. We have heard the voice of Scotland, and now the millions of voices of England must also be heard. The question of English votes for English laws, the so-called West Lothian question, requires a decisive answer. So just as Scotland will vote separately in the Scottish Parliament on their issues of tax, spending and welfare, so too England, as well as Wales and Northern Ireland, should be able to vote on these issues. And all this must take place in tandem with and at the same pace as the settlement for Scotland.
Now, wasn't that interesting, talking about more powers for Wales and Scotland there? But when he turned to talk about Northern Ireland, he talked about making sure that the institutions work more effectively here. Chris Hard, sounds as if he's talking about bashing heads together in Northern Ireland, because there's no point in giving us more powers here if we can't work together.
Well, again, I think in your last caller, John, highlights the real issues that face us in and around welfare and the need for all the executive parties and indeed for civic society, trade unions, the churches and the charities to stand up to austerity. You know, we see Plaid Cymru and the Welsh Assembly standing up today and saying we are totally opposed to austerity and that we want a bespoke welfare system to be able to deal with that. The Scottish are now being promised a bespoke welfare system to be able to deal with their own particular instances. And in the north of Ireland, it's exactly the same. You know, I heard the ludicrous suggestion from Gregory Campbell and the DUP this week that we should accept the Tory ideas for 8 months and then when it comes to the election, we should renegotiate our welfare system at that point. It's absolute nonsense. We need to stand now with one voice and say we're opposed to austerity. It's going to do untold damage to society here in the north of Ireland, and that we need to be able to deal with it in our own particular way.
Edwin Pitts.
Yeah, what Chris is really saying is that we will fork money back to Westminster by its million every month and ensure that Northern Ireland services, including health, education, justice, are starved of resource, and ensure that we don't have the money to invest in training and attracting jobs to Northern Ireland. John is absolutely right. There are thousands of people across Northern Ireland who are holding down jobs today who can hardly make ends meet. The best means to ensure that workers are well paid is that there are plenty of jobs available. That is the thing that makes companies actually pay the wages to attract the workers. And the only means of doing that is to actually target the economy, not to target actually welfare and ensure that we have the best welfare system in the world. I want to have the best employment system in the world. I want the lowest employment. I want the best jobs available. And I wish that Sinn Féin would actually focus on that element of life and ensure that people have jobs, ensure that people have opportunities, and the welfare issue becomes much less of an issue because people then are in a circumstance where they are receiving the real benefit, and that's going out to a job in the morning, doing a day's work, and getting well paid and well rewarded for doing that work.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people listening this morning perhaps are taking the view that we're looking across to Scotland where they've had mature debate and they're now seemingly looking forward to what new powers might be coming down their road, whereas they look to our politicians here in Northern Ireland and they're still entrenched in their old positions over welfare reform and we're no closer to any kind of agreement. Edwin Pitts.
Well, I'm sure that the Scots will have a very vigorous debate on welfare whenever they actually have the opportunity to do that. They don't have those powers at the minute. But I'm sure it's one that there will be substantial division on. And I suppose if we're arguing about welfare, we're not arguing about flags. I actually find that my greatest areas of contention with Sinn Féin at this moment in time and for some time are issues on the economy, are issues around the likes of welfare and about how we actually move things forward. Because I am strongly of the opinion that the best means of actually ensuring less well-off become better off and have greater opportunity is to attract more jobs to Northern Ireland, and the only means of doing that is ensuring that people are adequately trained and go out and bring those jobs to Northern Ireland. So my focus is on that, not on actually fighting and railing against the changes to welfare, which only means that Northern Ireland has millions of pounds taken out of its budget and then that denies services to other people who need it.
Last point to you, Chris Hazard, there. We talked about David Cameron ensuring that people here work together to make sure the institutions are more effective. Do you think is that code for maybe David Cameron getting involved now with the parties here, perhaps taking them away to another summit? Wouldn't it be ironic if we all headed off to Scotland again to try and resolve our difference here in Northern Ireland? Do you think is that going to happen now?
Well, I think it should be pointed out that it's very, very clear that the British government under David Cameron have disengaged from the entire peace process here in the north. And that's something that has created its own problems. So if David Cameron is now going to get more directly involved, of course that is to be welcomed. But I want to take Edwin up just at one point about welfare. And this is where the DUP have come across as somewhat illiterate when it comes to welfare issues. They keep talking about this issue of employment and jobs. See, the situation is, and this has been proved correct in England, it's the working poor that are going to be hit hardest here. It is those people trying to hold down maybe one or two jobs. The working poor who are going to be hit. It's going to be the elderly who are hit. It's going to be the disabled who are hit, the vulnerable society. They like to put out this information that it's what the newspapers might call the spongers. It's absolute nonsense, and that's what they need to get around. They need to stand up for the vulnerable people in their own communities, and that includes the working poor.
Okay. We'll leave it there. Let's park the welfare debate for another day. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for sharing your thoughts with us on the programme this morning.